Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical New England gaming. I'm laughing because for those of you watching live, we do record these live, I was a moron and I had the live feed focus on Adrian's face, even though I'm doing the intro. She's just sitting there like, it was very funny. So welcome to the show.
We have here. I shouldn't talk over you doing the intro. I'm sorry.
Well, it goes to show how big of a quality show is. We are here. The longest running tabletop wargaming podcast in existence, and still just crazy things. So welcome to the show. I am Jonathan, as I said, and we're going to talk about all sorts of really interesting things today. This episode 100 and something, 85, I believe. Wow, 185. Jesus. We've been doing this a long time. We're going to talk about how to prep for a convention game. So my buddy and co-host Adrian Benson is with us today. Adrian, how are you today?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks.
So I don't know about you, but I'm actually looking forward to this episode because you and I have done a lot of work in the past to make games that we then bring and run at conventions, participation games for those of you across the pond who might be like, what do you mean a game? Well, we go to a trade show and you don't get to play participation game. So before we go any further, I just want to remind everyone of one thing, and that is the link to the show notes. And the reason is because we're going to cover a lot of things, it's all in the show notes. So you can just head on over to wargamingrecon.com/WR185. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR185. We'll have everything there. So Adrian, how are you today?
I'm doing good, John.
Don't lie. We were talking before the show and you're not doing good.
No, I'm not doing good, but we can save that for another time. This will turn into another show.
Yes, it will. I think I'm allowed to say that you had purchased something and it arrived and it did not meet expectations, which it was supposed to meet, but the thing you purchased, you can use for many things, but you could also use it for stuff that would be useful for here on the show.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it definitely did not meet expectations, to say the least.
I really don't blame you for being unhappy about that. I don't. So without being so clandestine, that will appear in a future episode at some point. When, I don't know, but we'll get to it eventually. But for today, I know there's a lot of people who listen to the show and some of you who watch live who go to game days and you go to gaming conventions and you played in games and maybe you've thought, you know, someday I would like to run a game and you don't know where to start. And so we've talked a lot in the past on previous episodes about different things that you can do to have a good time at a gaming convention, or like do's and don'ts for both as a participant and attendee, or as a game master or an industry guest. But we've never really outlined what you and I do, Adrian, in order to take something from idea to reality. And not that we've done tons of events and not that we've won awards or anything, but we've done enough that I feel like we kind of know the secret sauce. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, and whether you win an award or not, the process that goes into getting everything ready is pretty much the same. It's just varies by the amount of effort you would put into it, I guess. But the steps are the same.
True. And not everyone who wins awards for running games actually run good games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'll leave that there. So why don't we start with the first thing on the list? And this is, you need to discuss how or where to start, what your idea is, how to choose the idea, why you chose it. And presumably this doesn't matter whether it's you singular? Are you like a group of you who are doing this? So Adrian, you and I tend to do stuff, and there might be other people who work with us, but we're kind of the core group of people who organize the stuff. So right now we're actually prepping for running a game for 2018. We are prepping for it. Let's wait till we get to that point.
Okay.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how we chose the idea and what it is?
Well, this year, the one that you're talking about is the game we're going to run at TotalCon 2018. And this one was an easy one to pick because the theme of the convention is going to be pirates. So it's going to be a pirate game using the new Kickstarter set of rules that came out called Blood and Plunder. So that's how we came up with that idea.
And in the past, we've done other things. We've done a lot of Black Powder games. We've done a bolt action one. And for each of those, like the first few that we've done, we did them with Black Powder. And I think, if my recollection is correct, we went that way because a buddy of ours, Court, had models already painted for them. So we didn't have to worry about it. It was 15 mil. And Black Powder was a set of rules that we were familiar with.
Yeah, those were both big driving factors. I mean, it kind of depends on your audience. I mean, at least that's the way we tend to look at it. And for TotalCon, at least over the past few years that we've been going, it's not a huge historical gaming contingent there. So we try to pick stuff that's going to be easy, which Black Powder is an easy set of rules to pick up, and stuff that's going to be of at least passing local interest. So the first game we ever ran at TotalCon was Black Powder, and it was an American Civil War scenario. Yeah, like cities and courts, 15 millimeter Civil War figs. But Civil War is at least something that, you know, everybody has at least heard of, even if they're not really into it. I mean, you wouldn't, or at least I wouldn't tend to run, like, I don't know, Wars of an Austrian Secession. I wouldn't run one of those scenarios at TotalCon. We did a Revolutionary War scenario, which that's obviously a big thing in New England.
French and Indian War. We did one of those too with muskets and tomahawks.
We did do a French and Indian War with muskets and tomahawks, but that was the primary, at least I think the primary draw there was the scale of it. We did that one in 54 millimeter with the armies and plastics miniatures. So it was a decent looking table. It was big toys, well painted, lots of fun, lots of eye candy, I guess. I don't know if the French and Indian War was necessarily a big draw, but I think the scale was.
And I think each of these kind of illustrates the fact that you can have different approaches to the initial step. So with the first games with the Black Powder for Rev War and also American Civil War, we were like, hey, this is new to us rule set that we liked Black Powder. And we thought it would be fun and easy for people to do something that we felt comfortable with. And we also already had access to a lot of the material ready to use, so it wouldn't require a lot of work. And for a first time, it was handy because that way, you know, like, you're not anguishing over everything. And then with French and Indian War, we actually, if I remember right, we were at the Hobby Bunker game day and we were going down one of the aisles, the 54 mil aisle. And I was like, hey, look at these. They're colored plastic, so you don't have to paint them and they're cheap. And so you're like, they are cheap. And we just kind of talked and we're like, hey, we can run a game with them because they're cheap. So let's buy a bunch because they're cheap. And then with bolt action, it was kind of a similar reason to doing stuff with Black Powder. You got interested in bolt action first, actually, because you had seen it at a lot of conventions and you liked it. And you're like, this is fun. We should run it because it kind of plays like a World War II movie. And so that was a different avenue for us to kind of do with that. And this whole Blood and Plunder thing is being driven by, yet again, if you go into a convention, they might have a theme or it might be a special anniversary of something. So actually the Civil War stuff we did, I think that was on an anniversary of the Civil War. And so we kind of hit on those high points for it to get that idea and to go forward. So having something where you're comfortable with it or you already have the stuff or it's going to fit a theme, I think those are kind of key points. Or if it's just really affordable, it has to fit your wallet too. Because, I mean, if you have this idea to run a game and it's going to look fantastic, it's going to look amazing, but if it's going to cost like hundreds or thousands of dollars and you can't afford that, then don't do it because you'll end up just half-assing it. And so it's not going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, I think most of the guys that tend to run games, certainly at the other conventions we tend to go to, like Huzzah and Havoc, most of the guys that run stuff there have pretty extensive collections of figures. They've been gaming for a while. But if you were, had just gotten into a game, really enjoyed it, and had been going to conventions for a while, and decided that you wanted to run this game at a convention, then yeah, that's good advice. That's one of the reasons we picked Bold Action to run this past year, was because it's a skirmish level game. We didn't have to we didn't have to paint all that many figures in order to make it happen. So that's the other thing too, is it's not just the expense that you have to put into it, but the amount of work you have to put into getting the models and everything ready to go.
Well, in one of our buddies and co-hosts, Alex Kostopoulos, actually prefers to play in GM skirmish games, not at conventions yet. I'm working on them, but just as a rule, because it takes less time to paint, it takes less time to assemble. You need fewer pieces of scenery and terrain, and it uses less money and less time. And so he has this dungeon crawl kind of freeform Frostgrave-esque minus the winter aspect of it, sort of open world thing. And he's been on the show talking about it. And for him to run it as a game, I think part of the draw for him would be it's a smaller game, so you can do it in a smaller time slot. So some conventions, TotalCon, for example, in the past, they used to do it where attendees paid per time block. So they would buy tickets in addition to the entrance fee. And it was like X dollars per ticket for covering like time blocks of 2 hours. So a game like Adrian, like you and I run, tends to be 4 hours. So that's two time blocks. So it's going to cost someone a lot more to play in our game than in Alex's game, because he could do it in 2 hours. And so I think that has a higher chance, especially if it's your first time and you're unknown to this convention, a higher chance of you actually getting people to play in your game. But not all conventions are like that. You go to something like Huzzah or actually TotalCon nowadays, they don't do that at all. It's just you pay one entrance fee and you get in, you play as many games as you want for however many time slots are, and Havoc's the same way. But every convention is kind of different. So it's important to know the rules of the convention that you go into and how they handle this sort of stuff, because you want to give yourself as much of a chance to actually do well with it, because you put all this time and effort in. And if you're a newbie, it's hard, right? Because not everyone plays. Like they come, but they're not going to see. Like the first few times we did it, I don't know about you, but I was really worried about people actually showing up and like actually playing in the game. I was like, all this work happened, and is anyone going to even show? So I was a little neurotic about it.
Yeah, it was definitely a concern. Especially the first time, I was a little bit less so the second time around. But yeah, I mean, it's always a concern. I mean, as we know, that people registering for games and not showing up and actually playing the game is one of our pet peeves. So.
It is, which was another episode of the show. Look in the show notes. So after you get all these ideas and you know what you're going to do, we get Blood and Plunder, whatever yours is going to be. You then need to go into the next steps, the continued steps. And so that's everything that happens after you have the initial idea and you write down initial idea. This is what we're going to do. Blood and Pirates is your idea, right, for us. So next steps for us was, well, what set of rules can we do for it? And this was kind of coupled in the beginning for us, where you were like Blood and Plunder. And so, what made you pick Blood and Plunder? Because you get full credit for this.
Because it's so cool.
Well, okay. So I never heard of Blood and Plunder before you mentioned it, and I was just like, okay. And I looked it up, and I saw it was a Kickstarter, and I was like, okay, the pictures look neat, but it doesn't tell me anything. But I was like, I'm going to trust Adrian because you've never steered me wrong with a game yet.
You should trust Adrian. You should always trust Adrian.
Unless it's for ASL, in which, although I'll still play because I promised.
All
But
right.
so, yeah, I mean, you never know. But like, I knew, okay, you wanted to do this. We're going to give it a try and see how it goes. And that if you said it was going to be good, I knew it would be good. But like, what made you realize, oh, it's cool, or that it's going to be good?
Well, there was a lot of hype around the Kickstarter. They put up a bunch of gameplay videos and whatnot. I like them on Facebook, so all the different clubs and everybody who are playing the game tend to put up a lot of after action report type things and gameplay videos. And then when I got the rules and read through it, I was just like, it's really kind of the perfect convention game, because the mechanics are simple. The theme is obviously something most people can get into, pirates. But mostly for me, it was definitely the mechanics and the way you can build your forces out, because that's one thing that you have to consider when you're looking at choosing a set of rules for convention play. Most games tend to be designed for two players. So can you take a game and divide the forces up in such a way that you can have reasonably split things up between four, maybe even six players, two on each side, three on each side. And that's easy to do in Blood and Plunder. And that's been a theme with all the rules that we've run at the different conventions, is it's easy to divide up the forces so you can get multiple players at the table. The mechanics of some games aren't nearly as well suited to that.
Maurice.
Yeah, Maurice from Sam Mustafa is a good example.
Who's going to be coming on the show in a handful of episodes?
August, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to release in September, but yeah.
Yeah, so... But, Morris is a good game. It's a fun game, but it's just not well-suited to multiple players. You can make it work, and we played in a game that Chris Parker ran, and he did it with, I think it was a four-player game he did. But he basically ran it as two separate games running on the same table, which is really the only kind of way to do it because of the mechanics of that game. But anyway, that's one thing that I look at, and Blood and Plunder is definitely easy to get multiple people on the table playing.
It also... We had another game we were considering doing before we knew about the pirate theme. But this other game that we were going to be doing, we were trying to figure out how to adapt a portion of it because there is a secret theme for Total Con that we can't really publicly talk about that only applies to certain people and events. And so we were trying to figure out how to get that secret theme to work with this other rule set. And it was going to be kind of a stretch, but you give me enough time and I can find a way to make anything work from a PR sense. But with this Blood and Plunder, it actually is easier for us to do it because it's a little more freeform in that regard. It's not as strict with historical accuracy or things of that sort. So we could have a little more freedom to use the secret theme, which we have to use. And so it works on that other level too. But the pirate thing, I think, was really for me the clincher because you talked about it. I was like, okay, you said the rules are good and it's going to be a good game. And part of me was still like, I want to do the other thing though. But then I thought about it. I was like, okay, the pirate theme, like, how can we not do a pirate thing? Because like this year, I didn't even know they had a theme. It was the Wild West.
I didn't even know about it.
I never realized that they had themes every year. Yeah. So we did a World War II game, which is as far from, and I got to say, not many people did themed games for it, but you go to something like Huzzah and they tend to. So you have a lot of themed games for it. And like this year, it was different because it was a big anniversary for Stalingrad. So they did the Stalingrad theme with a bunch of games based off it. So it was kind of nice to have that sort of thing. But depending on the convention, they really hit those themes for us. So having this Blood and Plunder for us was, it was really handy, actually. A great timing of everything.
Yeah, because Blood and Plunder, you can obviously play it, using historical pirates and whatnot, but it's, when you read the rules and play the game, it's really more of a pirate movie than it is historical pirates. So, yeah, it'll be easy to work that theme into the game. I'll leave the details of that up to you.
Which... It's why I'm here. And speaking of why I'm here, one of the continued steps is actually a division of labor. And if there's one of you doing the game, then, well, you know who's doing everything, right? But if there's multiple of you, if there's like a team of people, there's a group of friends or whatever, it can be tricky to try to figure out who's going to do what. Because you have like this, it's like being part of any team. What kind of dynamic are you going to have? Are you going to have one person taking on a leadership role and saying, okay, you do this and you do that and you do this? Or are you going to have people just kind of be like, no, I'll do this and it's my turn. I'll do this and I really want to do that. And how do you deal with that? So I think we've worked out a system that goes really well for us, Adrian. And
our system is pretty smooth. It works really nicely.
I was expecting a joke at my expense, actually.
Well, the joke is coming when I go into the details of what our system actually is.
Okay.
Should I do that now?
Well, let me outline it, and then you can go into. So what we've done, it really depends on who is going to be participating in organizing the game. So when in the past it was Court, you and I, Court kind of did some of the painting and stuff because he had the models and he just needed to do touch-ups or whatever.
Yeah.
You were the rules guy, so you really knew them backwards and forwards so that if there was questions, you can always say, okay, ask Adrian. And so the player would be like, there's this really in-depth thing, blah, blah, blah. And you say, well, it's supposed to be this way. And something more general knowledge about the rules any of us would be able to handle or like, what do I need to hit? And can I move this way? And how does wheeling work? Or how far do you go? Or that kind of stuff. Simple things that anyone could answer. And then I would take on all of the liaising with the convention, all the PR kind of stuff. So I would do all the promotional and just making sure that things get fixed when they have these problems, or that everything's all correct in that things are submitted. So why don't you dive even further into the details with all this kind of stuff?
Sure. If there's rules that need to be read, I read them. John doesn't. If there's figures that need to be painted, I paint them. John doesn't. If there's scenery that needs to be acquired or assembled or anything like that, I do that. John
not all of
doesn't.
It.
Not all of it, but
not all of it.
Yeah. So, but yeah, then when it comes time to actually go to the convention and receive the accolades and walk around with the Game Master badge, John does that. Okay. And that's how the Division of Labor works.
So I feel we need to clarify things a little bit.
Okay.
Just a smidge. You absolutely do all the assembly and painting of models. No doubt in my mind about that. That is one of your strengths. And you might not feel that it is, but it is. And I think when you're working with people, you really do have to play to people's strengths. So like, that's not one of my strengths. It would take me forever. I don't like to do it. I don't really want to find the time to do it. But if I did, I'd still be working on my first batch of guys. And so like, we would never get the stuff done in time. So like, that is fantastic. You're a rules guy. So it really fits that if it's something new and unfamiliar to us, or something that we haven't been playing much, I'm not going to have the time or inclination to do such a thing, but you take to it very well. So like, I don't know if you have like an eidetic memory or what it is, but like it sticks with you. So it's good to have that inner and deeper knowledge about it. So you really kind of shine with that. But as you said, with terrain, well, I think that's more of a mutual sort of thing. So neither one of us like builds terrain really. Like, we're not going to like build a house or something to put on the table.
No, I was going to say, I've tried and I'm past that now. I'm more than happy to throw money at people who do that.
Me too. And part of the benefit of that is then we can review it on the show. We can do whatever. So like when we did Bolt Action, I picked up Cigar Box battle mats. We reviewed them, did a thing or whatever. So we did get that. And actually like I got one right here, which I love more than anything in the world, because
do you like walk around with those? Do you like keep one in your man purse that you take with you everywhere?
I tell you, when I first got this, this is a plush one. I draped it around me like a cape, and I'm like, I'm Cigar Box Battle Man. And anyway, this probably more than anyone ever wanted to know. But like,
yeah, that's great.
So like I got that in, I get trained and kind of helped introduce us to the whole Wargaming terrain sort of thing and picked up a lot of that. And you have too. You recently picked up tons of it. But like, it's definitely a cooperative aspect for the terrain, I would say, depending on what we're going to do and where people are and things. So for example, there was a big church you wanted put out by Crescent Root. So you had picked that up and we ended up using that in the game. But I think you're going to get it anyway. Like I picked up other stuff. So we try to blend that. The things that really are mostly yours, unless someone else were to be involved, would be like the assembly painting of figs, which is a huge aspect of it. Don't get me wrong. And you deserve major props for it. And the rules, of course, those are key. And then like the other stuff was kind of divided, except for like any of that promotional stuff, like you don't have any interest in, I don't think. And so like all of that, it seems like it's a nothing kind of job. And at times I kind of feel like, oh, it feels like a nothing kind of job, but it's just because I like it. So like all of that, whether it's posting to social media or rallying people to get them to try to come to the game and all that, working with the conventions, it actually takes a lot of time. Make sure that your stuff is submitted properly, following up with them, making sure that you got a table, that it is where it's supposed to be, that you know what's going on, and if there's any issues, knowing who to talk to get things fixed. And so I feel like we kind of have ironed out all the wrinkles generally. Not that problems don't arise, because they do, but we're able to handle problems in any area pretty quickly.
Yeah, for the most part, I would say so.
So like whatever, like if something comes up with Blood and Plunder, we got it taken care of. Whatever the issue is going to be, whether it's at the convention or whether it's beforehand or any of that kind of stuff, we just kind of, it's a well-oiled machine, I guess is the nicer way to phrase it.
Yeah, okay.
No, you don't think so?
No, it generally works out okay.
It does. Don't lie. Yeah. It does. It does because I'm telling you it does.
Okay, fine. I mean, you get to wear the Game Master badge, so I guess you must know what you're talking about.
Well, clearly. And actually, I got to say, that has been in part for the past because whoever submits it, depending on the convention, but whoever submits it gets listed as the GM. So we've actually been able to, we do live recordings of the show at conventions. Yeah. And for a couple conventions, they've allowed us to have dual GMs, and not every convention allows it. So I make sure that we're both listed, so that we get that. But I believe we're actually going to swap it over, because by now, with a lot of the conventions that we've worked with, they kind of know if your name's there, my name's also attached. And so they don't mind if I'm the one saying, like, okay, give Adrian credit. He gets all the whatever, and not who cares. But, like, you need to talk to me to make sure everything's laced properly, so that way I can still do all that back end stuff without having to have my name on the thing.
Yeah.
And, like, when you're beginning, they need your name on the thing in order for them to talk to you about the game and the event. Because otherwise they're going to be like, well, who are you to this event? Why do we need to talk to you? We're not going to give you that information. We're not going to do whatever, because Joe Schmo or Sally whatever is listed as Game Master. And so we need to talk to them. But, like, I think they know that we're a group. They know us as the podcast now. And so any one of us, they're like, we'll talk to any one of you about any of this kind of stuff. So it's okay. So I think we're able to flip that around so that you can actually take the spotlight, since it seems to matter so much to you to have that limelight on you and all the accolades. And you know what? I'm going to just give you a little round of applause right now.
You are pissing me off.
No, but seriously, I agree. I think a large portion of the work is all that painting of models and that kind of stuff. And so why shouldn't you be listed?
Yeah, no, I agree.
So since it's something that we can do, I think it's worth doing. Yeah. If that meant they weren't going to allow me to do any of that other stuff to actually make sure that the events go off without a hitch, then my name would still have to be on there.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't care. I don't want my name on there. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So after you do all this divisional labor, and this is really like a huge job, just kind of figuring out who's going to do what, don't you think?
It can be, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we've definitely had like help in the past, like you talked about Court, and the first couple games we did, we basically used, well, all of the figures for the Civil War games were his. We did the Rev War game in 10mm, mm-hmm. and we used his Americans, and I painted up a 10mm British Army, which was, I won't say a waste of time, but I don't know if I'm going to be doing any more 10mm or not.
I got a bunch of it upstairs.
Yeah, I've got a bunch that I haven't painted. I got a bunch that I haven't painted yet, too. I don't know if I'll finish it up or not. But anyway, the point is, Court helped with that, with the Muskets and Tomahawks game that we did in 54.
Him and Adam Carey.
Yeah, they both painted part of the figures for that. And if they hadn't, that game never would have happened.
Yep. So, you really painted the lion's share, and you and I bought all the figures.
We did, but like you said, there were those armies and plastics figures, which are just they're butt ugly, but they're very cheap. And when you put some paint on them, they don't look that bad. So
I thought they looked really good. I think the problem was that the paint hasn't stayed on, and I don't know what kind of washing you have to do. I'm told a quick wash in the sink with soap and water does it, and you're fine. And then you do like a base coat, but yeah, I know some of you guys did that.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. Court said to use, after the fact, he said that you're better off, you know, you've got to wash them, but he said to use auto primer. Maybe that would work better, I don't know.
Yeah, his lasted pretty well, but even his stuff was coming off. I got to say, if you're going to pick up that armies in plastic, don't bother painting. Just have a red army, a blue army, a yellow army, a green army, and be done. Go old school.
Yeah, I would. I hate to say that, but yeah, if you're going to use those, and they're not a bad choice to use because they are so cheap.
No, and you can get a lot of stuff. And, I mean, they are 54 mil, so it's almost toy soldier scale. No, 40 mil, aren't they? Not 54.
No, they're 54.
Are they 54? So it's pretty close to toy soldier scale. So if you're doing that anyway, you really do want to go old school. So you want a very minimalistic kind of table. You want a little bit abstract. Give it like playing on the living room floor sort of feel, almost as if you were reenacting Little Wars. So you'd want to do that. And so you wouldn't want to paint them very ornately anyway. Not that they have all the detail.
No, they don't have a lot of detail. So, yeah, I mean, we painted them very toy soldiery style when we did them, which was with gloss, you know, gloss coat instead of a dull coat. And they look good for as long as they lasted, but they didn't last very long.
No, not terribly.
So, I mean, there's other options if you want to do 54 millimeter. You have all the King's Men, who has a great range of 7 years or French and Indian War and Revolutionary War figures.
Pricey. Plenty of,
his stuff isn't that bad. I mean, it's definitely more expensive than you're going to pay for your standard 28s or something like that, but it's not that bad. But if 54 millimeters is your thing, there's definitely better options out there than armies in plastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So then after you get past this intermediate stage where you divided all the labor and you're actually working on your projects to get everything happen, eventually you kind of come to the conclusion of that final act. So for us, what tends to happen in the days, hours, and minutes leading to the actual game, the actual event that we run?
I don't know. I'm usually finishing up painting right up until the last minute. Obviously, there's playtesting that has to be done. We didn't even talk about picking the scenario.
No, and that's key, because normally we pick something. Yeah. We try to give us a year to go from beginning to end so that we can do a lot of playtesting, because some people just playtest once and they're like, whatever, we're done. I think if you really are using a special scenario that you've created, you need to treat it as if you're creating a game from scratch. So you really need to iron out all the potential problems with it, because otherwise you're going to have a bad time and your players are going to have a bad time, and then no one's going to want to play in your games again.
Yeah, I mean, scenarios that we pick tend to be, try to pick stuff that's relatively well known. Like this year we did Bold Action, and it was a Battle of the Bulge scenario, and it was the
Best Christmas
Day attack on Bastogne, the last German attempt to try to break the encirclement around Bastogne. So everybody who's watched Band of Brothers is familiar with that scenario, that fight. So that's why we chose that. Also, we had a pre-made scenario for that. So we modified a bit, but still, we didn't have to go up the thing from scratch. The scenario is, if you go historical and you pick a historical battle, that's great and it's a lot of fun, but you got to make sure you pick one that's not one-sided, because there's plenty of those that are fun to play from a gaming standpoint, but it doesn't make for a very enjoyable convention game. Basically, you want each side to have a fair chance of winning. Not every real battle offers you that opportunity. So that's one of the primary considerations. If you're going to pick a historic scenario, if you're going to make one up on your own, then obviously you can do whatever you want to do. But if we're going historical, I do try to stick with stuff that people may have heard of. So for the Revolutionary War game, we did the Battle of Saratoga, first battle of Freeman's Farm, which probably most people haven't heard of, but if you then people show up at the table and you talk to them a little bit about the British campaign in New York, then they it may ring some bells from middle school or high school or whenever they get exposed to that. Hell, maybe they don't even get exposed to it now. I don't know. But anyway.
It's a fun one to play.
Yeah. So, but balance is the primary thing in the scenario. You want each side to have a fair chance to meet whatever their victory criteria is. You don't want one side to get steamrolled. And that might happen anyway, because, I mean, the ultimate arbiter of what happens in the game is the dice, and anything can happen. But you can't really account for that.
No, that's true. So I think that covers playtesting. And as you said, you're painting basically until it's time for you to leave to go to the convention. I've never seen you actually paint at a convention, like when you're staying there. You know,
no.
Some people do, though.
Some do, but if I don't have something finished, then it's not, we're just going to modify the scenario and not use whatever the unit was.
Mm-hmm. For me,
that hasn't happened though.
No. And actually, even if you're in a painting funk, you actually kind of rally, knowing that it's getting closer. I don't know how you do it, but you've managed to be like, okay, we've got like 2-3 units that have to be painted, like say 40 guys, 60 guys or whatever.
Yeah.
And you get them done.
Yeah. It kind of blows, but you got to look at it like a job at that point. But you know, painting's not really fun for me anyway, so it's always kind of like a job, but
your stuff always looks good, though.
Yeah. Anyway, that's why I'm painting pirates as we speak, so that we're hopefully not going to be doing any of that last minute like I did this year with the Bold Action guys. We'll see.
For me, I have like an initial rush when we first have the idea, so I make sure I write everything down, and I take notes during our playtesting and all that kind of stuff to try to get the details. There's a bit of quiet period other than, you know, just kind of following up and seeing how things are going and actual playtesting and that sort of stuff. But then it picks up again when conventions allow you to submit your events. And depending on the convention, those can be anywhere from 1 or 2 months beforehand, maybe 3, depending. They don't go too far in advance, but, you know, far enough. Because some of them print actual like event books that they give out. And so they get to go to the publishers and stuff like that. Yeah. And then it quiets down unless we have any actual last-minute playtesting or that kind of stuff. And then probably for the 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the actual convention, from then on out, I go into a full mode of just promoting the heck out of it, whether I'm talking about it on the podcast or using social media or with people I know, following up with the convention to make sure that things are in there. And by this point, they usually have released the event listings and online, if nothing else. So I'm always trying to verify that everything on there is what I thought it was supposed to be. And I usually hound them at this point, and they probably don't like it. But I usually hound them at this point to find out if they know what table or what room it's going to be in, because some of these conventions, they take up a lot of rooms. So yeah, where we're actually going to be located, if they're really sure that they have all the stuff to give to us that we say we need. In the past, when we've run games, we've needed like electrical outlets and things of that sort. So we've needed to be on the periphery of a room. We might have needed extra tables. When you're doing minis, you need place to put the models. You don't want them on the floor because people are going to kick them. You might not be able to put them under the table. So I kind of hound them about that. But it's a delicate balance because, I mean, they're in their final push too to get everything ready so they can bring all their crap to the convention.
Yeah,
to actually put it on for everyone. So like, I don't want to be a jerk and be like every day, oh, so how's our stuff? Next day, how's our stuff? Hey, because then nobody likes you.
Right. And we certainly don't want that, although you might have that problem anyway.
I might, but I'm told people like me. I'm very likable, you know. I'm a personable guy. People get along with me. I care.
Yeah.
So, yes, you do. So I do that kind of push. And then like the day or two before, there's another push where I kind of, I'm like, hey, here's the event or whatever. In some conventions, actually, they let you know in advance, or you can figure it out at least with some of them, if your event is sold out. So if the event isn't sold out, I'm like, hey, we still have spots, blah, 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 come and sign up and all that kind of stuff. And if we are sold out, I actually switch to promoting events for other people. They're like Mike Payne, who's part of the show. He does his stuff all the time. And sometimes he's full. Sometimes he's not. It's a great game. So like I'll promote his stuff, or like people have been guests on the show or other friends that we have at conventions and that kind of stuff. I'll be like, oh, look for these people, look for them, and try to have like a general list. Cause some people come into these cons and they've never been to before. So they don't know who is going to give them a good event to run. So I try to spread the love for all that. And then when it's actually at the convention, I'm still working, believe it or not, doing this promotional kind of stuff and liaising with the con organizers still. So like this year, it's not a game, but I think it's still applicable. We were doing a live recording at Huzzah. And so we were at Huzzah and I'm there with my family. And throughout the weekend, I was like, oh, by the way, do you know where you're going to put us? We don't need a lot of space, but we need an outlet, need access to the internet. Like, where are we going to go? And so even like the night before we were going to record, I was still working with people from the con and even that morning finalizing exactly where we're going to be and like just kind of checking, not being rude about it. And like they were checking in with me too to say, well, what do you need? Where do you want to be? And so stuff had been done beforehand according to the normal timeline, but there's all these kind of finalizations that happen because maybe someone else wasn't able to come and so they had to cancel their event. So they might have an opening somewhere else. So they might want to move you if possible, or maybe, you know, one of your team members has to drop out, or maybe they got more events than they thought, or there was more attendees. And so they need to rearrange stuff. It helps for you to be flexible. And a lot of that kind of stuff happens at the tail end, right? When you're at the event, and it's happened to us where they were like, hey, can we move you at TotalCon? We had to get moved for our recording. Yeah. We did that as an event in the Bolt Action. So we were able to kind of adjust that. And that was literally hours before we were going to do it. It was an on the fly kind of thing. And so just all that kind of stuff, being there in person, I think makes a difference. So you're not just instant messaging someone or texting someone or, you know, doing email or whatever the ways they have set up for you to connect with them. So I do a lot of that kind of on-site going back and forth and running around like a chicken with its head cut off sort of thing. Yeah. Sometimes anyway. And sometimes it's easier, but try to iron all that kind of stuff out. And even when we go to the table for the game, sometimes it's a matter of saying, where is that table? We were told we're at table whatever. We're in this room. Where
and
is
the guy
that?
Looks at his sheet and he says, oh, you're on table 8. Yeah. Well, which table is that?
Near the light.
I don't know.
It's near the light. But just look at where that is. If someone's at your table and you're like, oh, okay, well, is your game running long or what's going on? And just trying to like iron out all that sort of stuff.
So yeah, there's always last minute irritations can come up like that. But yeah, pre-planning gets rid of a lot of that stuff that would otherwise be a problem.
It really helps. And I mean, it could be something as simple as like you accidentally broke a model while you're there and just trying to get your hands on super glue or something to do a last minute fix, or, you know, whatever. There's a lot of different, you forgot to bring something. Is there a way you can make for bolt action? Actually, you had a last minute fix where you realized we were going to need counters or something to represent. I forget what it was going to be that it was going to represent, but you won tickets for something for the ticket auction, and you were able to get red counters, glass bead things.
Yeah.
And so like that kind of came in handy. So there's all that kind of last minute stuff, but it kind of helps, I find, to look over all the stuff that you brought when you get to the convention, and also on the day of, make sure you have it all and that you have a plan to kind of get it out there and do all that sort of stuff. Do you think I missed anything on those final conclusion actions for the events?
I don't think so, really. I mean, it's not, you're not talking about a hugely complicated process here. I mean, you're trying to get a game ready for a bunch of people to play. It's not,
it could be complicated. Look at Michael Johns, right, with his Frostgrave. That's complicated.
Okay. Yeah, he and probably Mike Payne. I mean, they're kind of exceptions.
Mike Payne takes 2 hours to set up.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So I mean,
I start to get cranky if a game actually lasts 2 hours. I'm, no way I'm taking 2 hours to set up. But that's just me. They definitely do. They're kind of exceptions to the rule, though. I mean, it's, there's more that you have to take into consideration, obviously, when you're taking a game to a convention, but for the most part, it's not too much different than getting a game ready for your club night or a bunch of friends to play.
No, just a larger scale.
Larger scale, and except for the administrative crap that goes along with going to a convention.
Mm-hmm. So. One thing we didn't discuss was cost. We kind of alluded to it, other than to say, you know, there is a cost to this kind of stuff, but there's definitely a financial and a time cost, if not other things.
Yeah.
Do you want to dive into some of that sort of stuff with?
Well,
stuff.
I mean, that's kind of one of the problems with our hobby is it's not really a cheap hobby to get into. I mean, all told, with between the scenery and the paints and a couple of books that I bought, the figures, all the models and everything, it was probably, just for me to do the bolt action game, it was probably $700.
Yeah, I definitely had a few hundred into it myself.
Yeah, so now that's not the end of the world, because obviously you can use that stuff over and over again. You buy it once, you never have to buy it again. But to get started, like and this is what we did this year, I'd played bolt action a lot, but didn't really own anything for it. Enjoyed the game enough that I wanted to, you know, play with our group and also run it at the convention. It's like, well, obviously it's time to start buying models and scenery to go with it. And it's a big investment to make it at the start. Now, you don't have to spend that much money. I mean, if you're talented and you have time and you don't get frustrated with things not working the way you want them to, which I tend to do, then a lot of the scenery and stuff that we laid out money for, you can build it yourself. Like I said, I've tried that. It never turns out the way I want it to look. It cost me, like I said, $700-$800 to put that game on at TotalCon this year, and I'm fine with that. I'm more than happy to throw money at somebody else to do the scenery work for me. I'm not doing it anymore.
Well, you and I, we were just playing a game of bolt action the other day, and I looked down at the table and I said to you, we got a lot of money's worth of stuff here, and I think you and I figured it was, what, like $350 worth of just like terrain and that kind of stuff on the table?
Yeah, I mean, that was...
And that was just for a regular game. But like you said, you don't need to have all this stuff to do it. You can just
go to your local
fabric store and get felt.
Yeah.
This color represents a forest. This color represents rough terrain. This color represents a river. And
yeah,
you get a big thing, you get it cheap, you cut it out yourself, you're done, and you put your money towards models. You don't even need models. There's a lot of print and play rule sets, Aurelion, for example, where you have unit tiles, which you can buy or you print out from the rules. Get some cardstock, you cut them out, and you can go a very abstract 2D kind of thing. So you don't even need to paint models. You don't even need to buy them. You can do whatever. Or board game. If you're running a board game event, you're outlaying from the board game, but you don't have to have all this other kind of stuff. So the game costs you like $80.
Yeah.
But like, that's it.
Yeah, you don't have to lay all that money out, at least not all at once. I mean, the terrain is just representational anyway. It's like, you know, like I said, if you're playing a board game, it just represents the terrain that you're moving across. It doesn't, your river doesn't have to look like a river. If you want to just use a strip of blue felt, that's perfectly fine, as long as you know what it is. It doesn't have a visual appeal, but you can get your game on the table a whole lot faster and for a whole lot less money doing that than going to the expense that we did.
Yeah, and if it's your first few times running a game at a convention, you might even if you can afford to do the expensive approach, you might want to do the less expensive one just to kind of see if you even like running games at conventions, because you don't want to outlay all that cash and stuff in it. And any monies you have, presumably, if you're doing it, it's because you like the hobby anyway and you play the games anyway. But any money you have, you're going to want to put into the models, I presume.
Well, that's the thing. You don't want to lay out all that money if it's going to be a one-time thing. If it's like, you know, you buy all that stuff and then you put the game on, or you play the, even if it's just for your group at home, you play the game, it's like, ah, this game kind of sucks. And then you waste a lot of money. And you're never, don't do that. Yeah, definitely do the cheaper stand-in route first. But that is a big drawback of the hobby. It's like people go to the conventions or whatever, or just walk into a local game store and maybe they don't know what the heck gaming is, and they just stumble into a store. Stumble into a store just to see what it's all about, what's going on. And I see it happen at Battleground down in Norton all the time, because in that shopping plaza, it's got the supermarket next to it. There's restaurants and stuff around. Moms wander in with their kids, and it's like you'll be there playing these games. And it's like, you know, how do you get involved in all this? And they get the wrong impression looking at some of the tables. You don't have to spend that much money.
No, but then they also, they're like, okay, we'll give it a try. And then they discover it's $20 for a measuring tape. If you get it at the game store, don't get it at the game store, but if you get it at the game store, or it's like $9 for a set of six dice or something like that. In all that other kind of stuff, it's like $15 for pliers or side cutters or whatever to trim the models off. Or never mind the cost of paintbrushes or the paints themselves. Like,
yeah.
And then the models, depending on the manufacturer, like if you do, and we don't, but if you were to do Games Workshop, heaven forbid, don't. But if you do, then it's okay if you do, but not for us. But if you do Games Workshop, you get like 12 guys for $50.
Yeah, it's crazy expensive.
So, I mean, it takes a while. It's not a cheap hobby by any, but you can do it on the cheap. We actually did an episode, I think it was episode 84.
Yeah.
We're gaming on the cheap, ways that you can do it more affordably. But even that way, it's still going to cost you something. And like you said, Adrian, you can kind of roll it out. It's a rolling start to things. So if you want to do the convention thing and you're going to buy some models, do a skirmish game first, right? So that way it's
exactly cheaper. Yes. It's a cheap way to get into it. Yep.
Just work your way up. And then every year, add a new piece to it, add a new element. So maybe you can only spend like $30 for the whole year for extra stuff. That's fine.
Yep.
Add one new thing. Mike Payne, actually, he makes like all his stuff, basically. He'll buy models if he needs to, but he makes all his stuff. He makes it to the point to have one new thing every year, whether it's a scratch-built ship or boat, whether it's, you know, a new terrain piece or a new element to the rules. I mean, he never runs his game the same way twice, but something new. And good thing about that is if people get to know you, they know there's going to be something new, and they're looking for that new aspect. So it's a draw, so it gets them in. So rather than having plop, here's everything. Here's this new thing this year. Oh, what are you going to get next year? I don't know. So they come next year and, oh, here's this other new thing. And so then they get to see. I think people like that.
Yeah, I think so.
So what have we not said about prepping for a convention game that we should say? That means nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we covered it fairly well. Oh,
we missed something?
Well, this just goes in prepping with conventions in general. Make your hotel reservation early. Otherwise, you end up not being able to stay in the convention hotel, which might be okay for you because it might be cheaper, or you can end up in a rat hole like I did at Huzzah last year. Not this year, but the past year.
I was definitely thinking of you.
Yeah, but that was totally my fault. I waited until the last minute to register, and I shouldn't have. But so that's something to...
Speaking of hotel rooms and rolling starts, some conventions actually do rolling starts for booking a hotel room. TotalCon, I think, is doing it for 2018, where you could have booked a room back in February of this year, a year in advance. I think it's crazy, but whatever. But only if, like, it had to be, like, a group of people, or you needed singles, I think, is what was going. No, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. If you were going for, they're like a 5 or 6 day convention.
Yeah.
Five. So if you were going for they were doing it by number of days. So if you, for the most number of days, you got to book earliest. And then actually, in June or July of 2017, for the number of days that you and I are going, we can book. And then it's, you know, fewer and fewer. So they're trying to give first dibs to people who are going to be there longer, so that way they get better rooms, which makes sense. But at the same time, I'm like, a year in advance, that's crazy. But at the same point, here we are. I'm highly recommend prepping for a convention a year in advance, 2 years maybe, depending on what you're doing. But you need about, I think you honestly need like 8 to 12 months to really get everything done, and the painting and all that kind of stuff, you iron it out. So why the
heck? To do it comfortably, yeah. I mean, if you don't already have the you know, the equipment you need to do whatever it is you want to do, yeah, definitely don't wait until the last minute unless you thrive on stress.
No, well, even then, don't do it. And at the same time, just book your hotel room, whether it's at the convention or wherever else, and don't forget to register for the convention. That's probably important. We didn't say that. But
no, well,
there's a lot of things we don't say.
That's another thing you don't want to leave until the last minute, though, or you end up getting locked out of games and stuff that you want to play in.
It's like common sense. It's not always so common.
Yeah.
So, no, those are really good points, though. I'm glad you made them. Since we have finished that, we can move on to my favorite section of the show, mailbag. And you and I were talking about this the other day on how I always think of that. I can't remember the guy, Sergeant, whatever his name is.
Early Army.
Early there Army. You go. I will never remember it, but I'll always be like, that guy from the thing on History Channel. So from Facebook, listener David said of episode 182, listener convention pet peeves. Some of those are funny. LOL, unquote. David, thank you. And first of all, thank you for writing in. I want to echo your response, Adrian. They were.
I thought they were all pretty funny. Yeah.
No, they were pretty funny. And we should do another one of those.
I don't know. We don't want to get a reputation as the two guys that sit around and bitch about everything, do we?
Well, I'm not saying we got to do it this season. There's always 2018.
Oh, okay.
2019. It's just we should do it again, yeah, in the future.
Yeah, no, that's not a bad idea. We'll see what the coming convention year brings.
And they don't have to be our pet peeves. They should be listener pet peeves. So listeners, contact us with your convention pet peeves, and maybe they'll end up in an upcoming episode of the show. And then via email, we got an email from listener Kyle regarding episode 184, Huzzah 2017. And his email says, quote, Jonathan and Adrian, I have a theory as to why Huzzah felt more subdued this year. For those of you who are listening and not seeing, I did the air quotes, bunny ears on subdued. The convention used to have a very robust presence from regional gaming groups. There were at least three groups other than the main historical wargamers that attended. There was even a trophy that went to the gaming group that had the best participation. But this year, the gaming group seemed to have all but evaporated. I only saw one person wearing a Northern Conspiracy shirt and not a single shirt from a Boston area gaming group. When the gaming groups had a much greater presence, the level of camaraderie was much higher, both within groups and between groups. The energy definitely much more heightened in those years, unquote. So first of all, thank you, Kyle, for writing in. And if you haven't listened to episode 184 yet, Adrian, you and I think you actually brought it up about the tone of the convention was subdued.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be as much energy, and Kyle touched on it when they had well, you had mentioned it, actually. I don't remember if you mentioned it when we were doing the show or if it was offline.
It was the Helm, actually, right? It was the Helm trophy that
they gave? Yeah, that they would give to would be awarded, and, you know, everybody would stop when they gave the award out, and everybody would be all huzzah and all. And it was, unless I was asleep for it, I didn't see any of that happening this year. They still gave the awards for, like, best in slot. But, yeah, there just wasn't any of the other, I hesitate to call it antics, but any of the other stuff going on that had happened in the past years. I'm not sure why that was. I mean, I think the official theme for the convention this year was supposed to be the British colonial period.
That's right. It was, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. So like India and South Africa, the Empire. But then the Stalingrad games, which were amazing. I think they kind of took over from that, and I don't know if it was official or unofficial, but I didn't even see that many colonial period games. I saw two, I think, that the people were running. I mean, there may have been more. I certainly wasn't everywhere all at once, but I only saw two. So I don't know. Maybe it was just an exception this year because of the last minute. Well, it wasn't exactly last minute because of the Stalingrad focus for the 75th anniversary or what, but maybe we'll get back to it next year. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I missed a lot of the convention because going with one's family, it can't be there very often. So I didn't get to see a lot. So I could have missed if they gave out the trophy. But you're right. In the past, there would be a theme and all the clubs would agree to do something. It was a club participation game.
So yeah, and maybe
would do stuff. So they'd be like, they'd get figures donated from somewhere, Warlord or whoever. Here's 100 Vikings. Remember they did the Viking one? Here's 100 Vikings, whatever. Here, who's going to sign up and take some? And this club would do that, or this would do that, or whatever. And then they'd all come in together, and who played in the most games, and who did what, or whatever. And like you said, you start with huzzah! And I missed it. So it could have happened, but I didn't see it. And
I didn't see it. And it's possible that they didn't. They may have presented it and maybe didn't get the buy-in from the clubs this year for whatever reason. I don't know. I have no idea what happened.
Could be. I mean, we're all getting older, and maybe it's harder for all of us to do. I don't know.
I don't know.
So, Kyle, I think you raised a good point, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again in the future if there's more feedback about it. Maybe someone from MHWA or someone who helped organize Huzzah has some thoughts that they'll share. I know they do their kind of post-con analysis where they evaluate everything. And there's been a lot of discussion online about different things that were not the same as in previous years and ways to improve. I think the convention was great, I got to say.
It was. It always is. But it was definitely different from years past, which isn't necessarily a bad thing either.
No, but I mean, maybe they'll release something but like, hey, we noticed a different vibe. And here you go. This is what we think it was, and so forth and so forth.
Yeah.
Who knows? So thank you, Kyle, for writing in. And we have some announcements to make. So the Hobby Bunker Game Day will be August 26th, 2017. And you and I are going to be there. We're going to be playing one or more games. Yep. And we're trying to see if it's possible for us to do a live show there as well. And I don't know details about that. You and I are still kind of talking about it. May or may not be possible, but we'll see. It might be a thing. Either way, I hope all of you get a chance to go. Hobby Bunker is a great game store. You'll have a lot of fun playing games there. They're very well run. They got good GMs. It's only, what, $5 to get in? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's what it was last year.
So you can play all day. They start when the store opens at 10, 9, 10, something like that. Goes until 11 at night or so.
Yeah, all day.
So it's really good. And then we've kind of alluded to this in the past and kind of talked a little bit about it, but we're going to officially discuss this now. Wargaming Recon is coming to you on video. So if you're listening to this, you listen to the audio podcast, which is always going to continue. It's always going to be free. It's not going to cost you anything. But on top of that, there's a Roku channel launching early July from the Nerd Broadcasting Network, and we are the flagship wargaming presence on there. So they're going to create the channel. We create the content. A fellow podcast from the TSR podcast network, the Mythwits, is also going to be spearheading the launch, and they're going to focus on all the things that they do. And the channel will include things like film, sci-fi, horror. It'll have gaming content, cosplay stuff, TV series, shorts. I think they got some old Flash Gordon kind of things and documentaries and all that kind of stuff. Eventually, the launch will then spread out onto Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Google Play, and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to have specific Wargaming Recon content. So when we record the podcast, we record it live, usually, and there's video content of almost every episode. So right now, if you were to go onto this Roku channel or on a YouTube channel or any of that kind of stuff, you could find the video of this, and you could see me doing this, and you could see Adrian sitting there just listening and being polite. But it gets more interesting. So we're going to release that as well. So we'll have the video, the audio podcast, but we're going to have extra stuff. So there'll be things like unboxing videos. We've done a lot of unboxing videos. For example, recently I did an unboxing of a Bolt Action Army that came, and Adrian, you and I did a dual box unboxing. I did that and you did some rules. So like that'll be on there. There'll be actual play content of us playing games, tutorials on terrain making. We're going to have coverage from events, vlogging, and all that sort of stuff. So you get really a whole kind of other side of the show there. So it's not going to replace what we do for the audio podcasts. I can't stress that enough. That will always exist. And eventually we might even be able to get the audio only submitted through the Roku channel. But they want to start with the video content first. So you get the video of the podcast, but the audio will maybe eventually be able to go on there as well. So I don't know why you want to listen to audio when you watch TV, but maybe you do. I don't know. So you can get that. That's where you can go on your TV and you can see the things that we do. People love that actual play content. So I think that could be big. And I'm really excited about it. And I think you're excited about it too, Adrian.
Yeah, I am actually. It should be a good time. It's going to be a lot I shouldn't say a lot. It's going to be more work, particularly to do the live play video and stuff like that, but I'm looking forward to it.
Actual play.
Yeah. Okay,
because
actual play. It won't be live play. Live play would suck. Nobody would want to watch that.
It'd be 6 hours of us saying, where are the rules is that?
Yeah, hold on. Let me look that up real quick.
Or me saying, do I need a three or a four to hit?
Yeah.
Because that's what I would say. Like, we played Bolt Action. And it was like, what do I need to hit? Do I need to roll a three? And you're like, roll a five or better. And I'm like, okay. You're like, roll a five or better.
And then he questioned me, is if you know the rules.
Well, but see, I never remember that to hit or to save stuff. That was always my downfall with those GW games.
I believe you need to hit a six. Are you sure? I'll tell you what. You go read the freaking rules, and then you can take on my responsibilities.
I never remember that kind of stuff. I'm just like, tell me what I need to hit. Tell me what I need to wound or need to save. It's just I want to move the figures around and do whatever. So, but you're right. It'd be hecka boring. So
yeah.
I think what we're planning to do is we'll record the video, and then we'll, like a documentary, we'll pretend to be Morgan Freeman but not sound as cool, and we'll take the video, we'll watch it, and then narrate over it. It'd be like, and it's not going to be like, say, 6 hours of the game. We'll take, you know, key turns or highlights or whatever. So it'll be, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes or half an hour at most, something like that, from a 6 hour game.
Yeah,
and just be like, here's this thing that's really cool. And it's like, zoom in, look at the figures. Oh, and unit, blah, 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 is doing such and such. You know, obviously more interesting than that, but something along those lines, I think.
Hopefully more interesting than that, because that's not very interesting at all.
Well, that was terrible. You can say that. It was awful. Just, but it's okay for the audio.
Yeah, we're going to,
We'll be doing that. And what else do we have coming up? Got to thank our Patreon backers. So, Patrick, Chris Parker from dayofbattlegames.com, and Kyle from Vermont, thank you for your support and being part of our Patreon community, which is a great way to both support the show and also be part of this exclusive community of people who like the show and want to help continue to make it happen. But then also you kind of get backstage access to all of us here. And you can become a Patreon backer for as little as $1 per month, less than a cup of coffee, actually. So that gets you behind the scenes content. It gets you episodes before everyone else. And depending on the level at which you back, you get other cool things. I need to say two things. First of all, we're halfway to our next Patreon goal that allows us to hire Joshua Shoebridge with a fair wage for audio editing. He makes me sound decent. It makes you sound great, Adrian. And the other thing is I have removed one backer level that used to be there. So we had a tape measure level where if you backed at that level, each month I'd send you a tape measure that was branded with Wargaming Recon. And I removed it because I can't get those tape measures anymore. So I'm trying to find another avenue for tape measures so I can get them. So there's one left and I've taken to using it for myself for a game. So you might see them in pictures. But if someone were to back, you'd get this exclusive limited collector's edition tape measure that's been used in official videos and content for Wargaming Recon.
Wow.
I know. Fancy, right?
Yeah.
So we get that. You can go to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to sign up, or just go to our show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR185, and that'll have a link to it there. We have an upcoming episode coming out on June 26, 2017. That's episode 186, where we're going to review Model Box, which I did an unboxing video of. So if you hear a little rattling, it's because I got the box up and there's some stuff inside. So we will review it. It's a subscription service where you get a box of models and modeling content, items, equipment, things every month. But you don't know what it is until you get it and open it up. So surprise. Maybe good, maybe not. I don't know. You got to listen and find out. And you can find out about all of our upcoming episodes by going to our episode guide, link in the show notes. So, for example, you can find out on July 24th, our review of Aurelion will be coming out. We're going to be having an interview with Sam Mustafa coming out September 18th. The Hobby Bunker Game Day comes out September 4th. We got our holiday gift guide episode on November 27th. And all that kind of stuff. But we have guests listed on there and who's going to be co-hosting and all that kind of stuff. So episode guide is a good thing. Do you have any announcements for us, Adrian, that you want to share? Information, that kind of stuff?
I do not.
Well, that's a letdown.
It is a letdown. I was hoping to have some exciting, interesting stuff to talk about, but you know what happened to that. So.
I do. But like, I hyped you. I was like, hey, we got all this stuff in here. How about you? Like, no, I do not. Thanks. That's riveting audio. Why we have you on the show. So That's what we got here, I guess.
Yeah, that may yet work out, but not before the end of this show. So no, sorry.
No, and unboxing video.
No, I was too excited, so I did not do the unboxing video, but now I wish I had.
Well, we can pretend that we never released this part of the audio, and you can just rebox and then unbox it again. Oh, look what I got! How amazing this is!
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
It'd be a good video. Although now I don't like it. So, don't forget, the link to the show notes is wargamingrecon.com/WR185. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR185. I really can't believe this is episode 185. So many episodes.
That's a lot of minutes of you talking.
Can you believe I once calculated that generally each episode tends to be about an hour long. And that's without all the pre-recorded stuff that people hear. Yeah. And every year tend to do about 25 episodes. So that's 25 hours of me talking.
Yeah.
Nobody should have to listen to that. And we've been doing it over 10 years.
Yeah, well, you have.
Yes. Well, the show's been around for over 10 years.
Yeah.
Not by this name, but so just do the math. It's like 11 years almost. 25 hours per year. 11 years, that's a lot of hours of me talking. I don't show any signs of stopping yet.
No. Yay.
People try to put a muzzle on me. I'm just like, And I keep going like that Energizer Bunny. I keep going and going because the truth is, as long as people like to listen, as long as there's financial support for the show because we can't pay for it all ourselves, and as long as I have the time and desire, the show's going to keep going. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe I'll be like 70 and I'll still be doing the show, and I can't do an old person accent, so it's awful. But I'll be like, so what you need to do is, in my day, back 40 years ago. Because really, I mean, think about it. I'm 35 now. I could do another 40 years.
Yeah, you could.
And then,
or you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. You never know.
Thanks to that vote of confidence. But can you imagine this being around for that long? Already like 11 years around, another 40. So that's going to be over 50 years, maybe, yeah, of maybe. Working Recon.
Yeah, Trisha might get tired of it long before then.
She might, yeah, my wife might.
Although I would think that if she was going to be tired of it, it would have already happened. I don't know.
You'd think. Some people hope for change. They never learn.
That yeah, no. The same. No.
But, I mean, I think there's enough content out there for many more decades of episodes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if nothing else, you can rely on the game companies to keep the content coming because they're releasing a new game, what, every 2 months?
Something like that. And as long as they're willing to send review copies, which we take, and when we get around to it, we do. And, heck, I think, like, the show comes out every other week. I think there's enough content for us to do a weekly show if we have the time.
If we had the time, yeah, definitely.
And actually, who knows? Maybe someday we could do a weekly show. Even if it was just for like a month, we did like a month intensive. Here's a like, thank you for being a listener. New episodes every week. Bam. And then we go back to our normal schedule.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably not. But you never know.
Anyway.
So I think that's what we got. Thank you, Adrian, for being on this episode of Wargaming Recon.
Yeah, of course.
And I want to thank all of you for listening to the show. Don't forget those show notes. You know the deal. No matter how busy you are, no matter how much time you're prepping for a convention game or having someone else do all the painting and prepping for you, know that you have to. You gotta. You need to. Keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.